Good afternoon, honorable members, colleagues and guests. I would like to assist the guest that has joined using iPhone. Can that guest introduce him or herself so that we can assist with renaming him or her? Mr. D, am I audible?
Yes, you are, Lubabalo.
Oh, okay. Thank you, ST. Colleagues, I would like to assist the guest who has joined using iPhone with renaming him or her. Otherwise, we are going to be forced to remove the guest from the meeting. May the guest who joined using iPhone unmute and introduce him or herself so that we can assist with renaming him or her, failing which we are going to be forced to remove him or her from the meeting.
Recording in progress.
Hello, Babalo.
Good afternoon, Chairperson.
How are you?
I'm good, Chairperson, and yourself?
I'm good. Can you flag the agenda, please?
Okay, Chair. Okay, Chairperson.
Sure. Something is wrong here. I can't see myself. I want to frame my video.
But you look fine, Chairperson.
Oh, it's hot here.
Good afternoon, Chairperson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Colleagues, Njani Baba.
Ndiyaphila Chairperson, thank you so much. Kunjani kuwe cha?
Hayi siyaphila, kuyachisa kakhulu.
Ingathi une light chair. Let me stop sharing. I think. Okay, can you put yourself on video again, Chairperson, so that I can see?
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
Much better now, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so you don't see that show. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mahlangu, are you there?
I'm coming.
Okay. Lubabalo?
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, Chair. I'm here, Chair.
Okay. Is Honorable Mahlangu who's chairing? Yeah?
Okay, Chairperson. Thanks, Chair.
Good afternoon, honorable members, colleagues. It's hectic, a bit hectic here. Yo, I don't know which side to take it for framing. You see? Okay. Good afternoon, honorable members and the stakeholders and our colleagues from both the committees. We are meeting as a joint standing committee on appropriation and select committee on appropriation. The focus for today is a public hearing, and according to what we have received, the response after publishing and inviting interested parties to come and participate here and make presentations, we have only received, according to the agenda, can you go down? We have only one presentation from Congress of South African Trade Unions so far. And I want to welcome Comrade, I don't know if it's Comrade Matthew, but we usually have Comrade Matthew representing COSATU. And special welcome to my co-chairperson, Ushenge, to the meeting. Do we have apologies, Lubabalo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, we do have apologies. From the Select Committee on Appropriations, Chairperson, we have apology of Honorable Ngqeta. From the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we have an apology from Honorable Mpangwa. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Honorable Karim's hand is up, Chair.
Honorable Karim?
Chairperson, at some stage, maybe after the input, we need to, obviously, I'm sure the two chairs are preoccupied with this too. We need to have a discussion about why we've only got one presentation. I don't think this has ever happened before. And the appropriations bill is probably more important than ever, given the broader economic, financial, and political circumstances we're in. But maybe the staff will assist us and say where they did normal things. I'm sure they have. They're very good. And advertise the radio and put in the newspapers what they normally do in different languages or whatever. But it is disturbing. There's only one submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Pat. Frankly, Comrade Jay, if I may say so, with the greatest of respect to Matthew, I can more or less, as indeed I'm sure you and the coach and others can, anticipate at least 80% of what he's going to say. But nevertheless, I'm teasing him.
Okay, thank you, Comrade Karim, for that icebreaking. You can lower your hand now, Honorable Karim.
Sorry.
Okay. Comrade Matthew, is it you who is going to represent us as usual?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair. That's correct. It'll be myself.
Okay. And then I think you understand when I say us. Nobody must be offended. The platform is yours. You are the only one today. All ears and eyes are on you. You're very much welcome. I think they have given you the sharing rights. Can you flag your presentation?
Thanks, Shelly. I'll do that. Sorry, I think I just need to get hosting rights.
Okay. Yeah, hosting rights.
Yeah, okay. It's there. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair. Apologies that I just myself, Chair. I know that's a bit of torture for Honorable Karim. It's cruel and unusual punishment. Thanks, Chair. You know, perhaps because it's a retrospective bill, you know, dealing with last year's remnants from the budget speak, so to speak. But we felt there's still, nonetheless, you know, there's some critical issues there. Even if it is addressing, you know, the outgoing financial year. But I think, Chair, you know, so I'm slightly intimidated by Honorable Karim, who knows that maybe COSATU is a bit predictable, but perhaps one could also say that it's consistent in raising issues. And it's positive that Honorable Karim is hearing COSATU's voice. But I think, Chair, we're a little bit concerned by what we felt, you know, last year's budget and the accompanying adjustment bill we felt were lukewarm. And of course, we're coming from a situation where the economy has been stagnant for many years and have really experienced quite a few challenges and crises. And there's a general sense of desperation, hopelessness amongst many workers. So we really felt the budget and the bill were just not bold enough on many fronts. We had hoped for an adjustment appropriation bill, you know, in October already. They would have done more to protect workers from inflation, rebuilding the state, you know, dealing with corruption, giving relief to the unemployed and, you know, stimulating the economy. But having said that, Chair, we think that there are positive interventions in the bill, which we support. But on a macro level, we do still feel that it didn't go far enough given the extent of our economic crises. Chair, let's go into some of the key kind of appropriations on the issue of Parliament. We want to welcome the 37 million rand that was allocated for Parliament. But nonetheless, you know, given that Parliament has experienced a devastating fire last year, it's a national key point, it's a heritage site, the seat of the legislature. We really think that Parliament, and we know there is some moves now, to do so, but we should really expedite the rebuilding of it. One understands the bureaucracy of a heritage site. On the COGTA front, you know, we noted that there was 12 million allocated to COGTA, but it's worrying that, you know, given the, from reading the budget and obviously what everybody sees in the in different communities, the sense of crisis in local government, that we didn't see more decisive interventions from COGTA. When you have 90% of municipalities in distress, last year we had 20 municipalities which couldn't pay the staff on time. Judging by the feedback we've received now from SAMU, the Municipal Workers Union, it's about 27 municipalities. So a significant increase in 1 year who struggled to pay staff. So we really felt, we'd hoped to hear more from COGTA about what are their plans to try to turn things around. So there's two allocations to Home Affairs. One is 92 million rand combined, you know, which we think is going to help boost civic services. We hope that's going to, you know, see an investment in the capacity and the staffing at Home Affairs, especially on the weekends. So we can begin to kind of turn this critical public service institution around. And hopefully we can see the kind of the ending of these long queues of the public experience all the time. The second allocation, Chair, for Home Affairs was around 300 million rand to support political parties under the Political Party Fund Act. So we think that's welcome. And it might sound a little bit strange, Chair, but we actually have become convinced as COSATU that that's not enough. Our motivation is that, Chair, I think we all want, I think across political party lines, we all want to see our political parties not being dependent upon private donors who might have very dubious motivations. And so if a businessman comes and offers political party X or Y, you know, 100 million rand or whatever it might be, that really can put that political party in an unhealthy situation, a dependency with these private donors. So we had hoped to see more than 300 million rand being allocated. And I think we must also bear in mind, Chair, that we are approaching the next national provincial elections. Elections by themselves are very expensive. They can easily cost, I'm assuming, about a billion rand for all the political parties combined, if not more. Not that we must, you know, fund extravagant campaigns, but I think it is time to have a conversation to say, can the public fiscus give more support to political parties in proportion to the representation in parliament, in the legislatures, so all parties, so they're less dependent upon private donors. So we think this is going to be beneficial to society, because when political parties are dependent upon tenderpreneurs, et cetera, whichever party, you know, it affects the public, it affects the fiscus, and so we can see the consequences. So we think, Chair, that we should be having this discussion, that we should also have, you know, a provision that when you have an election year, which is twice in the cycle, that amount should be increased for obvious reasons. And so perhaps that's something that with the MTPPS we should be raising with Treasury, that said, can we give the political parties more than the 300 million rand? Then, Chair, just in terms of, you know, some of the public services, higher education and training, there's a positive allocation of 156 million for the TVET. That's critical to helping young people to get some artisan skills, et cetera. That's critical to getting them into the workplace. You know, we know the NHI bill is still before the National Assembly, but the foundation work that the Department of Health is doing in terms of appointing NHI planners is welcome, but this is going to be a long journey. But we would want to, you know, to urge the National Assembly, the Portfolio Committee on Health, to expedite, conclude on the NHI bill. So there is time for the NCOP to also have time to process it, because it will be an extensive process for NCOP, one would assume. We were disappointed, Chair, that in terms of the CCMA, despite, you know, a flood of workers losing their jobs and wages, many being denied the deducted contributions like medical or pension funds, et cetera, or UIF benefits, many workers kind of being forced to work in quite unhealthy conditions, that there was no additional allocations given to the CCMA. And the CCMA really has struggled with significant cuts over the, you know, the MTF period. Yet they have a huge demand, an increase in demand for the services. It's positive that we've given 5 billion rand to the land bank. We hope it's going to be accompanied by the necessary management interventions to ensure it's kind of brought back to its feet and can play the progressive role as a state bank in the agricultural sector. And I think we also want to support the 104 million rand given to agricultural investments and to land reform. Chair, I think, you know, we have seen, we hope we're not being too optimistic too soon, but a bit of a turnaround on the SAA front. We've seen the beginning to reopen routes, domestic and regional. I think even international as well. I hope that's a sign of things to come. So we do want to welcome the allocation of the 1 billion rand to help settle outstanding SAA debt. So we hope as SAA kind of rebuilds, it will prioritize those 8,000 workers whom it had retrenched during its collapse, so to speak. On the post office front, so there's a 2.4 billion rand for the post office. That's, you know, welcome. The post office is hanging on for dear life. But we think, you know, we do need a proper turnaround plan, one which isn't, you know, simply based upon retrenching 4,000 out of its 14,000 or so workers. It's not based upon slashing the remaining 9,000 workers on salaries by 40%. So we think we need to have a proper plan which says, how do we pivot the post office, expand the services it offers? So for example, can it enter the courier service? Can it provide IT services for rural, for township communities? Can it become a multi-purpose government service site? For example, if you want to apply for your SASA grant or your home affairs documents or SMME funding, et cetera. And then, you know, the post office has still a unique footprint in townships and rural areas, et cetera, often areas which the mainstream commercial banks historically tend to neglect. The post bank bill is before the National Assembly now, so now it's before the NCP, if I'm right. It was passed about 2 weeks ago, I think. So if the NCP can pass it this year, and there's the post office amendment bill, chair, which is meant to come to Parliament soon. We hope that the department will table it soon, because that's also going to help repivot, we think, the post office and the post bank. And chair, on this, on the DMRE front, so there's 129 million rand given to DMRE to boost its capacity. We really hope that's going to make a significant difference, because you've got about 5,000 mining rights applications, a backlog in DMRE. If we can begin to, you know, expedite those, conclude them, that can enable significant amounts of investments by mining companies and create thousands of jobs, which are quite badly needed in the mining sector. And of course, that's additional revenue for the state as well. We do hope, Chair, that it also would see some support being given to the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate to further capacitate them, because we still lose about one mine worker every week. There has been some decreases, but it's still on average one a week. Chair, we also, you know, as we're speaking about the electricity crisis, there's a progressive RDP housing solar panel program in DMRE. It's meant to cover 150,000 RDP homes annually. We hope it can be revived, because for the past 5 years, it seems to really have been just collecting mothballs. On the DTIC front, you know, we want to support any allocation that's going to help boost industrialization, manufacturing, exports, and investment programs. So there's 34 million. But I think, Chair, we think we could do better for DTIC. Given that it has a huge impact, a positive one, in growing a variety of economic sectors in the country. Just kind of getting towards the end, Chair, you know, we were quite surprised last year, Chair, when we saw under sports, arts and culture, this allocation of 22 million rand for a, I don't know, what is it, 60 meter, 100 meter flagpole. We had looked through the budgets of that department, we couldn't find it. Similarly, we saw January this year, late January, was it the tourism board, whatever the right name of it is, proposing to donate a billion rand to Tottenham in England. And I think what we're raising, Chair, is that we don't find these kind of budget allocations in the budget. So we're not sure at times where departments, you know, get some of the mandates. We would assume they'd have to include these in the budget and not leave the entire country, including the presidency and treasury and parliament and all of us, you know, flat-footed when it comes to some of these, what do you think, are very reckless ideas when it comes to taxpayers' money, especially in a climate when the fiscus is really struggling and there's much more critical priority areas besides these ones. But we do hope that because they're not there, we can conclude these chapters and we can all learn the lessons from them. Chair, just on the social relief front, so the Presidential Employment Initiative has really done quite well, you know, to help about 500,000 young people get experience, especially as teaching assistants, you know, earn a salary and learn some skills, etc. So we're quite disappointed, Chair, that in February last year, it was at 24 billion rand. In October, it was decreased to 18 billion rand. And in this February's budget speech, it was further decreased to 9 billion rand. And then next year, there's no allocation for it. And yet this is we're still having an unemployment rate of 42%. We still have a much higher unemployment rate for young people of about 60%. We had really hoped last year, October, we could have pushed it up to a million participants, you know, say 36 billion rand. and continue likewise this year. So it is quite disappointing that in fact our call was did not find support in Treasury, and it has done quite well on that that front. Chair, just on the SOD grants, I mean, there was a lot of debates earlier this morning in the Standing Committee on Appropriations, but I just think, we want to say we support the SOD grant. We're pleased that it was extended, last year and again this year. You know, really has given a huge sense of relief to 8 million unemployed people. It is a major intervention by the state to help the most destitute in society, and this money will just help stimulate the economy. But I think we're concerned, Chair, that since it was introduced in 2020, it has not been adjusted once for inflation. We think we should be pushing it towards the food poverty line of 644. And we think there's a need for greater attention by Social Development Treasury about some of the administrative challenges people who apply for it still experience, including waiting for long queues at the post office, et cetera. But nonetheless, Chair, it is a very positive intervention by government. As a foundation, we think for a basic income grant of sorts. We should be moving everyone to electronic payments. And we think we should be including these recipients, as the Minister of Finance correctly says, linking them to skills training programs, to employment placement programs, et cetera. But having said that, Chair, we did find it quite unfortunate that in that adjustment appropriations bill, there was a cut of 3.7 billion rand for SOD grant because of the declining take up, because of some of the administrative issues. And that with all of SASA's administrative challenges, there was also a cut of 81 million rand for SASA for administrative support. And we thought that was a mistake. And Chair, just on the security cluster front, we think there are positive allocations to help rebuild the security organs. So correctional services, 426 million. The Defense Force, which is doing excellent work in KZN during the disaster in Mozambique, 800 million. There's been about almost 300 million rand for the courts, which we hope that's going to help address the backlogs, and 46 million for the NPA. So that's part of tackling the corruption, turning the tide. We want to welcome the 1.9 billion rand for the police to help the additional 10,000 officers they appointed last year. But having said that, Chair, there is a bit of a misnomer, and perhaps one can be corrected on the reasons. So there's an additional allocation of 257 million rand for the VIP protection security services. You compare that to 126 million rand for the detective services. And we know our detectives are literally drowning in dockets. And a very tiny 10 million rand for crime intelligence. We think that can't be right. The priority should be on detective services, crime intelligence, and less on bodyguards. So in conclusion, Chair, I think we want to say there are positive aspects in the adjustment appropriation bill. On the law enforcement front, frontline services, the post office, et cetera. But we are worried about the cuts to the SOD grant and the cuts to the Presidential Employment Initiative. We do hope in October, Chairperson, to end, that we'll have a much bolder, more progressive and aggressive MTBBS if we're really going to grow the economy. We have to really have something which is going to really push things along and not just simply take a minimalist approach, so to speak, on many issues. But let me end there, Chair, and hopefully I didn't take too long. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Comrade Matthew. I was still expecting you to go on with your presentation, because you are the only one. That's why I didn't say anything about time limit. But I think you understand that we need to share time, and you have raised valid points, some that will trigger the debates and inputs from the members. I will now request members to raise their hands as an indication that they want to raise issues or engage on the presentation from COSATU. Can the colleagues from the two committees assist in identifying members if I'm not able to see them? I can't see any hand for now. But I know there's a hand that I'm sure it will come.
We have Honorable Karim's hand so far.
Dennis?
Yes, Chair.
I can't see your hand.
That's because it's here, Chair, but I don't have anything to add to the presentation. I mean, I know the content. I'm not really going to debate. But, Chair, since you've opened the platform to me, I think that it might be important for us to note some concern around the fact that there's only one presentation that's come forward today, in spite of the fact that there are people and large organizations engaging in the media space with matters, but not bringing their concerns to Parliament. And perhaps as the committee, through the secretary, we could engage with some of the CEOs of big multinational. There were a couple of banks that came out, let's call it that, and then a cell phone company that came out with comments in the media about the current state of the country and the economy. It would be helpful to us, Chair, if they would come and help guide us in our work as the committee that has oversight over the executive. And I think we should perhaps engage with them. I mean, certainly if one considers the banks all have economic units, where they do substantial research and they have clever people that can teach us things about how we should be advising or what oversight we should have, or what suggestions we could come up with, it would be helpful to us. But in terms of the presentation we've had, thanks to Kisatu for always coming to the party. Your comments are noted, and I mean, I agree with most of, or with some of what was said. I don't agree with all of it. I do think that the COGTA issue is the only thing I would pull out of that for real additional comment is the fact that it is disappointing that you know, in spite of the state of local government, there doesn't seem to be sufficient focus on from COGTA in terms of doing something to fix it. We've got a new minister. Hopefully the new minister will be seized with that. But, you know, they've now inherited a budget which is pre-drawn up and already focused on the old programs. One wonders if the new minister will want to engage with some of the direction of the department and change things. But, you know, we'll wait and see. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Kaiso, may come in.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And Comrade Matthew Parks, for making this presentation as COSAT. Honourable Chair, I think the second adjustment appropriation bill largely seek to intervene very positively on a number of areas as outlined here. And I want to agree with COSATU's areas of recommendations there, more particularly on the issue, firstly on the issue of your party political funding, because it's very much critical that party political funding be looked at very seriously in terms of funding, because the 300 million is not enough, really. So we are the champions that should ensure that democracy should be exercised in the country. So that will also include the issue of resourcing the political parties such that they are able to carry their mandate. So, Honorable Chair, the issue of these state-owned entities, as we assist them, the bill seek to assist or intervene, I think it's very, very much important that certain things must be done differently. And surely the issue of non-performance by some of these state-owned entities or state-owned companies, it is really related to issue of administration or management of these entities. And there are individuals or teams which manage all these entities. So we cannot just pour money there without necessarily seeking some, you know, having interest as to how are people doing, performing, you know. Is it worth it really to just pour in money without looking at these people who are driving these processes there? Are they really performing that? For over a number of years, we have seen how these state-owned entities some were degenerating to an extent that we see how post office has performed, how SNA has performed. You know, it calls for an action from our side as a committee as well to say there has to be at least also consideration that or measures that say overall that the management, the package of assistance or intervention there in that place. Because it's not something that emerged. It is a chronic problem which should have been noticed at a distance that there's a performance of management. Look, for instance, post office has come to a situation where it has now to retrench or threaten to retrench 4,000 people, workers, who feed a number of families, each worker. And therefore, they will be facing a black future. So, as the assistance is being given to these entities, I think there must be measures, very stringent measures. You know, for instance, we can't say SAA. We must have interest in SAA. At least. The government must operate in such a way that it says, okay, SAA, we government will take 51% of the shares. So that nobody control himself or in that particular instance. Now, on this issue of Honorable Chair, let me rest my point so far, but thank you very much for COSATU's making this contribution, positive contribution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Karim? Comrade Yunis?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Actually, I put my hand up mainly because nobody was speaking then, but maybe I should say something. I think my issues are mainly covered, actually. So on the political parties thing, I agree. It's really not enough. On the post office, I mean, we've raised this before, Chairperson. I think when we had that physical meeting on that Tuesday, that really this is not on, right? Not only the job losses, but the role of the post office for large numbers of unserviced people. I think we must be strong on that. Well, saying so, we're not blinkered. We know that money gets squandered and wasted, mismanaged and stolen. But that doesn't mean that the people at the far end of this service delivery thing, the ultimate beneficiaries, must suffer. They don't do anything wrong. In fact, they are being wronged because they don't have proper services and they don't have the means to use other options apart from the post office. So, you know, they get doubly punished, both by their marginalization and by the failure of the civil servants whom we are meant to hold to account, particularly the Communications and Digital Technology Committee. Then on universal basic income grant, Chairperson, as we've agreed before, we fully support this thing. We think it's going to be very costly, yes, but it'll be far more costly to the country if we were not to do it. I think it was re-emphasized that. The question I'd like to ask COSATU is, what do they make of the employment tax incentive? We had a submission, you might recall, Comrade Matthew, during the fiscal framework report hearings, fiscal framework hearings, where an academic said, actually, the figures given by Treasury are not quite correct. Let's put it that way. And then Treasury replied, but we couldn't explore that beyond the one pager and a few comments made by Treasury officials. The one page reply in the slide presentation. Then on the SRD, we read about this quite a lot. But can you expand a bit more? What are the administrative failures? I know there's underspending, but you know what is going on there? Matthew, from your side, and maybe, well, Treasury officials will obviously reply from their side. Then we discussed it again this very morning in the NCOP meetings, the joint meetings of the two committees to look at the APP, the water crisis. I mean, it's going to be far worse by all accounts from the account of experts, you know, than the current ESCOM crisis is. And we experience it all our municipality, not least here in St. Lucie. Every now and then, the water is cut off. And you know, you meet people who say for 3 days and you know what's going on in Joburg. So, you know, we need to give more attention to this. I'm not saying it's about more money necessarily, but about the effective use of money. Now, I don't know whether this is done and how effective it is, but the NCOP often has, you know, I don't know why Dennis is interfering with me, chairperson. This thing about water, he's acting like he's the first person to raise it, and now we are being influenced by him and all that. Quite frankly, it's been raised years ago. At the time when I chaired local government, that was an issue already. I think it came up in the early 2000s when he was still in his nappies. So I don't know why he's interfering with me with his comment there, because it pops up on the screen, chairperson, and it's totally uncalled for, because he'll write a report to the DA and say,
you see,
yeah, he's going to write to the DA chief whip and say, you see, I raised these issues and now even the ANC is agreeing. Meanwhile, he forgets that he wasn't here in 2000. I think you should smack him on the wrist, chairperson. Don't be soft on him. Then, the final thing is, you know, I think comrades from and colleagues from the NA side, right? The NCOP, the Appropriations Committee, I think does very good work, really. And, you know, we really find in appropriations the provincial chairs come in of finance and so on. At times, other provincial chairs too, who are the people from these committees. And we do, on the appropriations side, maybe do more of this in terms of what happens with money at the provincial and local government. It was our job, not the only job, Dennis, before you interrupted it. So I don't know, chairperson, whether we share our reports with the NA committee, because some of them deal exactly with the question just raised about how is this money spent. It's not about allocations. And whether the opportunity is there for the members also very busy on NSI to read it. But sometimes it might be necessary, comrade, Buthelezi, you know, to actually maybe give 5-10 minutes allocation to the reports if what is emerging there is different from what the NA picks up anyway. Because we obviously have the provincial chairs of finance, at least, and appropriations is the same committee in the provinces, as you know, more with us than probably the NA does because of the different roles we play. But I think that's something we need to consider as committees. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Parim. Can I ask the co-chairperson to come in? Shenge?
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. And thank you, Comrade Matthew Parks, for the presentation. I saw that in your presentation, you covered many other things, but just to say the 2022-23 Second Adjustment Appropriation Bill, it's a total of about 9.5 billion rand, mainly focusing on the 1 billion rand bailout to SAA, 2.4 billion rand to SAPO, 5 billion rand to Land Bank, 300 million rand to political parties, and 3.783 billion rand on unspent SRD fund. I think basically that what the bill will be covering, but there is no harm obviously in talking about other things because budget, what happens in another area does influence other areas of the budget. So my questions, the first one is the recapitalization of the land bank by 5 billion rand. So I just want to check from your assessment and from from your assessment and from what you have heard from your research, whether the land bank has played the necessary developmental role, mainly to assist the emerging farmers. Here we are, as Parliament recapitalizing it after there was a stalemate, and with the funders of the land bank. But mainly, you got my question: the type of the developmental role that the bank is playing, in particular in assisting emerging farmers. Related to that question would be, do you think that emerging farmers should receive preferential rates at the banks, not the same rates that you get at the banks or the rates that everybody else gets? There are many reasons to justify that. I won't get into them. So that the bank should really be seen to be playing its developmental role. On the SRD grant, I think we've seen that fewer and fewer people are accessing the SRD grant. DSD and SASA will say we are doing our work more efficiently. We're ensuring that people who don't qualify don't come and get the grant. But there's another school of thought which says, no, the qualification criteria to access the SRD grant is very stringent, right? And I would like to associate myself with that sentiment. For instance, right now, with all the poverty that is there, with the unemployment that we're having, we have got 3.783 billion rand, which was initially allocated for the SRD grant coming back. And this is not the first one. Remember that during the MTF, 1.8 billion rand again was taken away from the SRD grant. So the question is, what do you think should be done to make sure that leave people who are deserving out of the safety net that we are trying to create? Then coming to SAA recapitalization, obvious National Treasury came up with some of the conditions that they are putting for recapitalization of SAA. We do hold the view in the committee that even more conditions should be attached to this recapitalization. But I just want to get from your side, what do you think, your comment on the conditions which are there, or perhaps what do you think should be added? One thing which has come from our side is that as they get the strategic equity partner, there's a proposal that the workers of SAA should have a percentage of shareholding in the new equity holding at SAA. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Those would be my questions.
Thank you very much, Shenya. I think the most important thing, there are things that I saw on slide 4 and 5. I don't know if it's possible, Lubaba, to flag that, or Matthew, Comrade Matthew, slide 4 and 5. But most importantly to me, and I think we are agreeing as a committee with the presentation or the input from COSATU that the funding for party political the party political funding, it's not enough, and I think there's a consensus there. Because this is not something that is going to benefit only one party, but all the parties. And we see many, the number of parties has increased. But then I, from where I'm standing, I think it will also, in addition to what the honorable, some of the honorable members have raised, in a way, this will also curb the corruption that might be as a result of the deals or the conditions in as far as funding is concerned to other parties. So I think we are reaching a consensus on that one. Now, I said six. I mean, I said four and five. Four, slide four. I requested slide four. Yeah, on this one of Parliament, it's fortunate. I think you're fortunate because I'm co-chairing that committee that is responsible for financial management of Parliament. But then we are taking this responsibility of rebuilding Parliament together with the Department of Public Works. On several occasions, we have called them to come there. But I think also this Friday, we will be having a meeting again as the Committee for Financial Management on Parliament. We'll look into that. I think we are happy to see that there are other stakeholders that have an interest on slide five. I've spoken to this one of the 300 million rands that I think we need to agree as the two committees that as the joint committee that the 300 million rands is not enough and we need to support the input by COSATU and recommend for an increase. On the first bullet, the 92 million rands to invest in service, in civic services, you say it's welcomed and more investments are needed to turn this key public service around and end the interminable queues, public experiences. And I can't agree more on this one. But also, I expected you, Comrade Matthew, the situation that we see now, in as far as the strike in the public service, it cannot be a good thing that each time public servants have to get their wages, their wage increase, there need to be such activities that are taking place. I'm not saying it's wrong now, but it's within the right. I'm just saying we should be listening more. And make a lot of noise about it. Something might be wrong somewhere. And without really taking the responsibility of COSATU or the shop steward, or repeat myself during that live, is that the problem is that budgets are done before the before the negotiations are starting. So the negotiation cycle vis-a-vis the budget cycle needs to be relooked by the bargaining council together with NEDLAC to assist us and to assist those public servants. And having said that, yesterday I was at some point where one has to interact with the angry public servants, and the information that is being communicated to the public is incorrect about, I was also listening on the radio while driving, that us as members of parliament, we are getting this much every year, we are getting increments, we are getting all that. So the society itself is being confused, and they are either not going to be sympathetic to us as public servants, as members of parliament, because we are associated with the government, or they are not going to be sympathetic to the public servant as they are raising their grievances. So I'm just requesting. So I'm done with these two slides, Comrade Matthew. I'm in support of what comrades have said, and colleagues. We are in agreement with what we have said, correctly said by Comrade Karim, on the SRD and post office issue. We have discussed that. We have raised concerns directly to Treasury. On SAA, I think, I don't know if this time it can be LIFO or something else. You are very much correct that you are saying you recommend, or you like to see an environment or a situation where SAA is considering former workers or former employees as first preference. And I'm agreeing with you with the understanding that those workers, they will be coming with an experience or some skill that they got while they were employed there. But we should not close doors. We are not saying doors must be closed for the young people that we need to, we need them to be employed at that space. Before I hand over to you, Comrade Matthew, to respond, I thought initially Comrade Karim has requested that maybe afterwards we need to find a few minutes to talk about this thing. But Dennis has raised the issue. Why do we only have COSATU? They never miss an opportunity just to make noise outside, but not grabbing the opportunity. And I want to believe that as the select committees administratively, we have done our best. I don't know the hand, Honorable Karim, do you still want to come back, or is there an old hand?
No, Chair, I want to speak on another issue when you're finished, please. Okay. Just one quick thing.
Okay. All right. No, it's fine. So, It's really worrying to all of us, because I'm looking at the participant here on this platform now. We are 46. And you ask yourself, of the 46, we have a certain number of members of parliament and staff, support staff. We have interested parties, but the question that we must ask ourselves, why are these interested parties, and we also have media, of course, but why are they not grabbing this opportunity to come and view their opinion here to enrich our input, so that we can as well influence this budget, just like COSATU did. So our report is going to lack that, and people will have questions. Honorable Karim, before I request the secretariat to confirm the the process in as far as an invitation to the public for this public hearings. Honorable Karim?
Yeah, no, just a quick thing. I meant to raise this earlier. I'm sure all of us have experienced this, but in our constituency work, there's an escalation of cases around the Department of Home Affairs. And we are getting flooded with these things. I must say, in my own view, we have a very good minister. I don't necessarily agree with him all the time, obviously, but he's a very effective minister. I've dealt with the new DG as well, quite good. They have excellent parliamentary liaison officer, but the number of cases, I think, with all of us is increasing dramatically. And you also have anecdotal examples where you go to meet some friends or you go for lunch or you bump into people at the airport or in an ANC workshop or whatever. And it all comes out, the difficulties the citizens are having at the Department of Home Affairs. We mentioned the long queues and so on. And I've also dealt with three ministers around that through my constituency work. And we were told at one stage, because Yenam Sindusi, it's a crisis. It's eased a bit that it becomes a crisis again with the queues. For example, let me give you examples. I think we need to raise this thing because we should put more money, but we also need to demand more from the staff overall. I mean, you have people who, when I spoke to one minister, he said, well, the banks are going to do it soon and it'll relieve pressure. Of course, there's no bank in this town that does that. You have to go to Tegwini, right? Two is, we asked them, can't you give people slips of paper? So, you know that number one to number 180 will be dealt with that day instead of people waiting till 1 o'clock and then be told, no, come the next day. These are things that don't require money. I don't think we should take over the job of Home Affairs. They do need money. And to the extent we support them, we also need to say some of these things, that it's about efficiency and effectiveness, apart from dealing with all the other myriad of issues that surface in the press about wrongdoing and so on. But Department of Home Affairs is a big, big issue that ourselves as appropriations and mainly the Home Affairs committees on both sides of the House, NCOPNA, we have to do far more, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. I said before I give back to... Okay, Honorable Buthelezi Shenge.
Yes, Chair. No, I was saying let's allow Comrade Matthew Parks to come in so that you can see whether we do have a second round of questions emanating for what we'll be saying. So I'll prefer that. Let's just give Comrade Matthew Parks to come in. Thank you.
Okay, Comrade Matthew.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Thanks to members. Perhaps Chair, one is biased towards Parliament, but at least I can say from my little experience, there is value making inputs to Parliament. You don't get things overnight naturally, because Parliament has to take into account multiplicity of constituencies and interests, etc. Same thing with government and treasury. But what you can see, on the budget issue, the fact that the SED grant is still alive, 3 years later, because of a variety of stakeholders saying yes, it's good, let's keep it alive. The fact that you have a presidential promise stimulus. I think the fact that many of our legislation, you would see positive, accommodation of civil society's inputs. So I think it's a pity. I'm not sure why. I know as Kosata, we like to always make our little noises, but I can definitely say that there is value, and members of Parliament do to the level best to accommodate that. I think just Honourable Ryder, one would hope the new Minister for COGDA, who has a lot of experience in local government, and the new DM, also a lot of experience. We hope they'll bring new energy, new ideas. But because I think, Chair, without being alarmist, the status quo is dying. The fact that a decade ago we had 10% of municipalities in financial distress and today it's 90%. I was talking to colleagues from SAMU yesterday about Ditsobotla municipality in the Northwest. And the fact that I think the monthly expenditure of that municipality is about 15 million rand, yet the income, including the grant from National, covers only half of that. So they're collapsing. I think the fact that you have now 27 municipalities, so 10% of the national complement, are now owing workers monies for whatever salaries, deductions, et cetera. And again, many of these are the same ones which owe SMEs too. So the status quo is dying. We need to find what is a new model. Is it the district model, whatever it is? Is it a consolidation or a new financing model? But the status quo can't be sustainable. And if you look at the division of revenue bill chairman, you just see many of the cuts to different rural municipalities in parts of the former Transkei, the Karoo, et cetera. And the budgets are being cut. You wonder, these ones are already collapsing. How much more are they going to collapse if we cut the budgets? But I don't have all the answers, Chair, but the alarm bells are there ringing for all of us. Chair, we had deliberately raised the issue of the party political funding. Initially, when it came into effect in Parliament a couple of years ago, we were very skeptical as COSATU about it. But I think we have been convinced of the logic of the state funding political parties. I think just simply for the benefit of society, that you remove the temptation of businessmen, we make it more difficult for them rather to go and corrupt political parties of whichever, you know, t-shirt. I think that's for us is the critical thing. So it's definitely worthwhile to say two political parties, if you need a billion rand combined, for example, for the next year's elections, let's do that because that's going to help to protect the state from state capture, or state capture can happen to any political party in government, helps to minimize corruption, et cetera, to protect democracy. So I think from our point of view, and we wanted to raise it deliberately here, Chair, so to kind of begin the discussion with Treasury as well, that when you head towards the MTBPS, we could have that 300 million rand being pushed to 1 billion rand, if that's the right amount. And we'd be happy to support that as COSATU Chair. And to explain to the public as well why it's in all our interests, for all parties, not just our friends. On the SOE front, I mean, we would agree with Honorable Price so that the era of bailouts is over, but you do need turnaround plans. You do need some recapitalization. Perhaps in some instances, we need subsidies where there's a public good SOE or the entity needs support to provide. But obviously, they must stand on their own two feet. They must be repivoted. You must have competent management. The corruption must be dealt with. And we think at times, because there's been structural shifts in many of the sectors that they cover, be it the post office, be it electricity, et cetera, there is a need for them to offer new services, et cetera. But Chair, a decade ago, all these SOEs were world-class, well-run institutions. They can be once again. And perhaps one must also look at the Chinese approach to how do you manage SOEs to deal with the issues of mismanagement and to make sure they provide a supportive role to the economy and they're not a hindrance. But we would hope as we kind of wrap up this administration that the Minister for Public Enterprise would be able to table the SOE shareholder management bill. So we have a new model which makes sense for the 21st century because the existing model is, to be honest, Chair, it's rapidly dying. I think the same point on the post office, Chair. We supported the post office amendment bill. We hope it comes to Parliament soon. And we supported the post bank bill because I think that's going to help to repivot the post office and the post bank. They can provide the essential public services that Honorable Karim correctly mentions for informal areas, townships, villages, and rural areas. And if you go to parts of Limpopo, Chair, I'm sure the same in Mpumalanga, you may have to travel 50 kilometers to the nearest ATM in some parts. You go to Mopani District, et cetera, Vembe. The only ATM, the only bank branch will be in a town, which is very, very far away for pensioners, et cetera, who would have to spend an inordinate amount of money to access cash, et cetera. So, but you'll find there is a post office footprint in many, township areas, et cetera. But again, it needs new management, it needs new services. But we think it can also help to inject competition in a sector which often is very uncompetitive with a bit of collusion. Chair, just on the SOD issues, I mean, we think that the SOD grant is a very valuable intervention. It has a huge impact. You're reaching 8 million people with 36 billion rand. That's a massive impact. It's not perfect, has a lot of issues. It really should be increased to the food poverty line of 644. I think, and it's not money lost to the economy, Chair. So you people spend it on transport, on food, electricity, et cetera. Research has confirmed its impact, it's been positive. I think, and we can share with some of the submissions that have been made around the SOD grant application process. But I think the issues that have been highlighted, why you've had a decline from 10 million people out of about 12 million people who are unemployed, or 40 million rather, to about 8 million. I think often there's been challenges around the application processes, just applying online. The verification process have often been quite a hindrance. You know, you must be verified every month. Maybe perhaps it's better to verify people, re-verify every 3 months. There's been concerns around the database not being properly constituted. People who have some sort of income or any cash that's put into the bank account often have to struggle to prove where did the money come from, even if it's a small amount. So we think, Chair, that we need to kind of maybe make the, without opening the doors of corruption and fraud, et cetera, but make the conditions a bit more user-friendly, and including that, for example, that if you can't apply online because you live in a rural area, you don't have access to a smartphone, whatever the story is, allow people in some instances to apply physically, but you need to address the post office queues because people won't apply if they know they're going to have to queue for 2 days at a post office, and still at the end of the day, the post office clerk says, well, I've run out of money, come back another time. And perhaps one could engage, SARS, the banks, GTEC, to assist with fixing the systems, because right now it's a very good program, but you can see many people who should be eligible are not able to access it. Then, Chair, just on the issue of the employment tax incentive, it's a difficult one, to be honest. We have had an engagement with SARS, with Treasury at NEDLAC. I can, share some of the reports we've had in NEDLAC from research institutes like Stellenbosch, with Treasury, et cetera. It's difficult because under the tax laws, SARS is not able to disclose tax information, even to Treasury. So you're not able to know, is this the new workers coming on board, or is it existing workers who are just now getting a subsidy, or the employer getting a subsidy? You're not always able to know if we're creating a revolving door or actually helping to create new jobs. So that's difficult, so you don't know. It's difficult to assess the impact. But I think on a positive note, we haven't seen many job losses, which we had feared in the beginning that, older workers would have been retrenched and have younger workers. It has been extended. It's difficult, Chair, because we're in a bit of a hard space. We were quite skeptical as Kusat in the beginning, but we're in a very desperate situation. So we're a little bit reluctant to do anything which can jeopardize a single job. But I think we do welcome when Treasury is reviewing all of its incentives to say, what's the impact? Is it worth it? Or can we look at creative ideas? On the water crisis, Chair, I think one thing we're very pleased with in the new budget is a significant increase in funding for water infrastructure. I think it's about 125 billion rand over the MTEF period, especially towards George, Drakenstein, Nelson Mandela Bay, for obvious reasons, Saul Plaatje as well in Kimberley. So that's positive because I think the water crisis really is the next ticking time bomb after the electricity crisis. Chair, I think also maybe perhaps one could also say on the water issue, I don't want to get in trouble with Honorable Karim, but I think there's positive lessons we could learn from the city of Cape Town when it had its water crisis, what is it, about 6 years ago, in terms of the mobilization of the public behind a national or local crisis, managing demand, investment in infrastructure, addressing the leakages. I think Cape Town managed to reduce the leakages from, I think, about 35% to about 12%. And you can look at Nelson Mandela Bay, one of the big problems there is the leakages. There is positive lessons we can learn around recycling of water from Namibia as well. I think it is a national crisis, Chair, and we mustn't think that it's only an issue of Port Elizabeth, et cetera, or the Karoo. It is a crisis in Limpopo, it's a crisis in Gauteng. Even if colleagues don't cities don't always know it at times. To Honorable Shenge, around the land bank, one doesn't always want to be negative, but I think to be fair, to be honest, we don't think the land bank has played the role it should have played to support emerging farmers, be it emerging farmers, be it farm workers or women in rural areas. And you can see emerging farmers struggle to access finance from the private sector, and hence there's a need for land bank to really be biased towards them, especially for farm workers who may not even know they can apply for access to it. And Honorable Buthelezi is right. We need to have preferential rates which are unashamedly biased towards emerging farmers, especially to farm workers who want to farm. I think even beyond that, Chair, we would even say even commercial farmers too should be given preference by commercial banks, simply because we have about 800,000 jobs in the agricultural sector. And of course, for national security reasons, food security is our most important economic sector. And, you know, if Europe and the US, et cetera, can unashamedly champion the agricultural sectors, we should too. It's not like any other sector of the economy where if it goes, you can move on with life. Chair, I think just to on the issue of SAA, I mean, I think for us, that is our understanding that when, you know, the 8,000 workers were let go, that as SAA was rebuilt, et cetera, from 1,000 workers to 2,000 to hopefully 4,000, that the former SAA employees who are available or interested would be given priority. We hope that will be honored. I think also the issue of monies owed to some of these former workers, you know, again, because often they get shortchanged, and they did get shortchanged with monies owed to them. That should also be a matter of priority. But I think it is positive we're beginning to see SAA rebuild. It's a very difficult industry. So we hope that that's a sign of that it's getting back into its feet, et cetera. Chair, I think we do welcome the movements by Parliament to begin rebuilding. And we saw some of those interventions by Parliament. So we're hopeful. But I think having said that, Chair, I think one positive thing of COVID-19 and the fire, again, without becoming a bongi for members of Parliament, I think we can see during this past 3 years, Parliament has been more busy, more productive and efficient than when it was physical. I think the fact that Parliament is now virtual, it means a grandmother in Sundunzi or a pensioner in Vembe can access Parliament from the living rooms. It really makes Parliament open to society. I think it makes it more efficient. Members of Parliament who can be in the constituency in Mpumalanga, government officials can be in the office in Pretoria, and of course you save significant costs, etc. So I think for us it's about finding a new normal for Parliament where, you know, a sona or budget speech, those kind of high profile things can be physical. But I think also many normal committee things could be virtual as part of, evolving, etc. I think just lastly, Chair, on the last two issues, I think Honorable Buthelezi and yourself, about Home Affairs, I mean, it is a mess. I think we're hoping that 92 million rand will help to address the issue of vacancies. Because if you look at Home Affairs, you'll find where there should be maybe 8 staff on duty in terms of the frontline desks. Maybe you've got 3 staff. We hope the Saturday issue can be resolved. We think there's a need for significant investments in IT capacity. And part of the problem, Chair, there is not Home Affairs issue, it's the problem of the CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, which really now and again just makes life very difficult for Home Affairs. We hope that can be resolved. In addition, I think there has been some progress by Home Affairs to tackle corruption. Obviously, more must be done. Then I think lastly, the Chair, the issue of the public service strike, I think you are 100% correct, Chair. And the point is there needs to, by all parties, to listen to each other, to engage, at times to compromise. The state can impose a wage freeze, it can impose a below inflation increase, they can do that. But as you see now, the strike and some of the incidences, it's a festering wound. The state needs to fix its relationship with public servants if it's wanting to meet its, the objective it sets out in the SONA and the budget. If you don't do that, Chair, if you simply impose wage freezes, what happens is that you will see, and we can see it now happening, there's a rise in the brain drain. You can see doctors who finish the community service on a Friday, literally on a Saturday, they're on a flight to the UK. You can see nurses going to the Middle East. You can see teachers going to the private sector. And that's really further compounding the decapacitation of the state. We think we agree with government. We don't want to see government going bankrupt, but let's address the fundamental fiscal leaks. And we do hope, Chair, as you're mentioning, that we can move back towards a 3-year cycle, because that's going to benefit the state, it's going to benefit labor, et cetera. So I think, let me stop there, Chair, and hopefully I answered honorable members' questions. Thank you.
Now my lungs made me go pink.
Thank you, honorable members. I see the hand of honorable Buthelezi after the responses from Conrad Matthew. Thank you so much for the responses. Honorable Buthelezi, Shenge.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Comrade Matthew. I think in the interventions you are talking about are very much welcome. Let me just make a comment on the Home Affairs story. You have just said the problems all can also be linked to the relationship with CETA, and yeah. my response to that one, and perhaps I would like to I think that all departments should have just a responsibility to their IT. These are necessary bureaucrats. I've seen it. You go to departments, many departments, when you start questioning these things, when you say, why did you pay more? They say, no, it was because of seat and so on. I've never had a convincing rationale at the moment. Perhaps historically, it might have made sense. But as things stand now, I'm very, very much skeptical about this arrangement. It's not different from the arrangement, I'm touching on a different matter, of public works and departments, where departments must go to public works for the fixing or the replacement of a bulb. It's unnecessary bureaucracy in the system. And perhaps I agree, but just to underline oral members that this is a 2022-23 second adjustment appropriation. The appropriation bill is still coming, and I would imagine that more people will have more say when it comes to the appropriation bill, which will be seized with in the next term. But maybe I can't let you go without answering this one. There was a lot of misinterpretation of the Concord finding about the regulations. So many of those who are...
Honorable Buthelezi, you phrased somewhere.
Okay, can you hear me?
I think it was taught, yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mashango. No, I was saying I can't let Comrade Matthew go before addressing this one. The Concord judgment around BEE, that was about BEE regulations, right? So many of those people who are anti-economic transformation deliberately misinterpreted that as the court saying that there should be no BEE, there should be no economic transformation. It's not correct. This is a constitutional imperative. There's a law that talks about how we deal with economic transformation. So, but with that misinterpretation, I just wanted to check your understanding of the role of the SOEs in as far as employment equity is concerned and in economic transformation, and say, what are your members saying? Do you think that the SOEs, which were in the forefront of transforming the economy in these two areas, are they still following up on this on these policy in imperatives? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Buthelezi, Siyabonga Shenge, and I hope your inputs are not triggering any further debates, and members are, as they are supporting the presentation by Comrade Matthew, are satisfied by his responses, with no indication. I will now, honorable members, take this opportunity to thank you, but allow the co-chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriation to have closing remarks, parting ways, as we are coming to the end of our meeting. Comrade Sfiso, Honorable Shenge.
Comrade Chair, thank you very much for presiding over this meeting, and also thank the oral members. Thank you, COSATU, and our support staff and everybody who's on the platform. Thank you very much. Back to you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Buthelezi. Thank you, Honorable Members. Danko. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okie dokie. Baya danki.
Thank you, Chair. Malibu.